Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a recipe or an email, email us at please at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you'd like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about positive memory. Yeah, positive memory, what we remember from the past, because memory is past, that is affecting our future and our present. So, like we often do, let's try to get some categories together. We had some discussion beforehand because we announced the topics early, and so we've already got an idea of where we're going, but let's get some categories. So we're going to ask, what are the positive memories within our context? What kind of memories do we use within our context of an alternative dispute resolution, a negotiation, a seminar, a workshop? Anytime we need to get group of people together to reach a successful outcome. Yeah, anytime we do a negotiation, for example. So what are the positive memories that we call upon, or the memories, within that context? Yes, and I see we're getting quite a bit of agreement. Thank you all for being here. And I think that the first what types of positive memories that we use is experience. Yeah, we're going to talk about experience. And, you know, this is interesting. I'm going to call this category reputation, where people talk about us because we did something or we listen to something that somebody is saying about one of our people, one of our person in our group dynamic, or maybe someone we're dealing with on the outside. So I'm going to call that reputation. Yes, we're getting a lot of people talking about it. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. We're getting an awful lot of people talking about the fact that memory is subject to interpretation. Right? Yeah. And sometimes we remember things a little different than they actually were. Yeah. And this is oftentimes brought up when there's a videotape of something. There's actual proof of what happened. There's a digital recording made. And we look at it and we go, oh, it's not exactly how I remembered it. Does that happen to you? Yeah, it happens to all of us. Oh, that's not exactly how I remembered it. Yeah. And then you look back and you go, wow. And that leads, of course, to your perception, right, which is our next topic. I think the perception of prior events. You have the interpretation. Is that how it really was? And our perception, especially when we are reevaluating our interpretation. We have a different perception standing back than we did at the time, don't we? You know what, we're going to have quite a few categories, but that's okay, because it'll lead to an interesting discussion. I'm going to call the next one hindsight. People are talking about using your memories and your, even your positive ones, on how to improve what you've been doing. Yeah, that's kind of hindsight. You look back and you go, if I were to do that today, I would do it differently. Yeah. I would improve upon my response. And you know what? I think we're going to end with a very important type of memory for us because it impacts our group dynamic. It impacts our relationship, our dealing with outside people, people outside the group. And that's, I'm going to call it collective group memory. The memory of our group, maybe, what we did together, but also the memory of the group that each of the participants is representing within our group, right? The collective memory that has given them opinions, that has given us opinions, because after all, we have it too. It's just that we try very hard to think about it and to not let it persuade us in a negative manner, right? Right, yeah. Collective memory. Collective group memory, I'm going to call it. Mm-hmm. So let's get down to it, because we are practical people and we want to know what to do about all of these things. How about positive memory and experience? Yeah. Rich and others are saying that in prior negotiations, you gained insight in how to deal with the specific participants. You know, memory doesn't have to be long-term. This is true. As you go along, you're forming prior memory, right? And as you go along, you're getting more intuitive, more able to deal with these specific participants in a successful manner, because you can gauge their reactions and you're listening very carefully, because that's what we do. We listen and we watch and we consider how the participants are interacting with each other and with us as the leader, right? Yeah. And so with the prior negotiations, we have gained insight in how to deal with the specific participants. Mm-hmm. You know, this is being added upon, which is good, because that means that we're all thinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hello. Thank you all for being here. Elias says that you not only gain insight into your participants, but you get insight in how to deal with influential outsiders. Yes. So as we go along in this negotiation, in this getting together, in this instance, as we go along, we gain more insight, we gain more memory, we gain more understanding and experience about our participants and their reactions, and about insight how to deal with influential outsiders, as Elia says. And, you know, we often talk at Recipe for Peace Now. By the way, archived shows on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Mm-hmm. We often talk about the invisible third party in the room. And that's the person, the people, whom each of our participants, and quite frankly, often the leader, kind of report back to. It's the person when you leave the room who says, "How's it going?" Mm-hmm. And has an influence, has an idea, has an opinion about what should be done next, right? Yeah. And that influencer is always to be taken into consideration, because it's not just the people in the room. It's the people that they will report to, maybe a formal word, but who they want to have good thoughts about them, right? People who they want to have someone say, "Wow, you're doing a really good job. I'm really impressed." Those people. Yeah, we call them the influencers, but really they're people who our participants want to influence. They want to come out and they want to say, "Look what I got. Look what a good idea this is. Look how successful I was in the negotiation." Yes, and that is prior memory and experience as to what that relationship's going to be. Mm-hmm. Yes, Joan and others are talking about experience with the type of negotiation, not the individuals, right? You get experienced in certain areas. You get a reputation, which is what next thing we're going to be talking about. And you get kind of repeat business, right? Word of mouth spreads that you're really good at this type of a negotiation. And therefore, when people have the same type of issues, they call you in, which means that you get experienced within the area, even if you haven't seen these particular participants before. Yes, and you call upon your prior memory of what happened in the past to help you to to shape what's going to happen in the future and now. Mm-hmm. And to lead, really, right? Yeah, because people like to follow somebody who knows what they're doing. And you know what you're doing because, well, you've done it before. Oftentimes, lots. Yeah. So that's good. Mm-hmm. Experience with the type of negotiation, not with the individual participants. Mm-hmm. Yes, we might as well bring that in right now because it impacts all of these. A lot of people are talking about the 5W questions and that this is the moment to ask them when you have new participants or when you have a topic that needs to be that you want to know how come people have their opinion about that and whether or not the invisible third parties are influencing, right? Right. And we're going to break out the 5W questions, aren't we? Yes, which we do all the time. And it applies across the board. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, why. Because they get down to how come, right? And if we don't get some basis for who, what, where, when, and why, then we won't know what the problem is, and we won't be able to solve it, right? Right. So we're going to use our prior memory of what happened before, our present interest, and our open-ended questions to find out where it is we're headed, who, what, where, when, and why. A lot of people are asking if you ask those right in front of everybody. I'm going to say the two words that you guys say I say a lot, but I do. I'm going to say it depends. This is where you're going to use your prior memory and your experience and decide if that is a question that we all need to hear the answer to. If those are questions, that's a question that we're going to go around the table with so everybody can answer. Or it's something that is best done, at least at first, in a more personal setting. For example, during our time out, when we have the breaks in the negotiation, where we all sit, hang out and have the potluck and have a more of a networking thought, the leader could take aside the person who we're going to ask the questions of. And ask the questions, right? Yeah. I usually, which not always depends on the situation, I usually try for taken aside and quietly asked first. Mm-hmm. First of all, it gives us all a moment to think because sometimes the person, the participant who is being... well, stubborn in some odd way, let's put it that way, hasn't really thought through the who, what, where, when, and why, especially the why part. Haven't thought it through. And that may be a subject for a kind of a more private discussion where we get down to the fact that whatever their position is not reasonable under the circumstances, right? This specific place, this specific time, for this specific negotiation, we're going to set whatever kind of a bias or something we're dealing with aside, right? Right. Yeah. So I like to start private, and then I work my way up if the problem's not being resolved. Mm-hmm. So, 5W questions. What else do we need in order to use our prior memory and experience? Hussein is absolutely right that we need to keep an open mind and understand that memory is of the past, although it's relevant. We need to keep an open mind and understand that memory is of the past, although it is relevant. Yeah, the past is the past. It doesn't define our future. But past memory does affect it, right? Yeah, because, well, it influences us. What we thought, what we did in the past, naturally speaking, influences what we're doing now, right? Yeah. So it's, you do need to keep an open mind, as Hussein says, and understand that memory is of the past, although it's relevant. What happened then is not now, ever, even if it's similar. Now, it is true that all of us, as we get more experienced, we see the same type of negotiation a lot. I do, especially professionally, because you get to be kind of an expert in it, and you get called in, which I'm not complaining about. It's a very good thing. But you always need to keep an open mind, because each situation is different, and the people will not react in the same way. Is it a little bit predictable due to prior memory and experience? Yeah. But remember the little bit. It's not the same. Mm-hmm. Sitara and others are talking about the prior use of experts, and that if you used an expert in the past and you thought that they were good and it was valuable, that you might want to bring them back to look at the present, right? Because oftentimes an expert has a different viewpoint, kind of fresh eyes. Sometimes you bring in an expert really because we're all tired and we've all kind of gone round and we've all negotiated for a while, and we need to bring in a third-party expert to kind of set us back on the track, right, and push us forward and help us make decisions that need to be made before we can go forward. Yeah, it's one of the reasons that I bring in an expert, because sometimes we've gotten kind of off to a side, and we need to be redirected. And somebody besides the leader and the participants needs to kind of make an executive decision to go forward, and what's important to go forward with, and what's actually been done, right? Yeah, what we're done with. And that's important, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, and that has to do with having another third party impartial, right? Because people listen to the experts. Yay! Now let's go on to the next one, which is reputation, which we have already touched upon. Mm-hmm. And it's very, I can't even stress how important reputation is. People kind of ignore it and go for the immediate, okay, I guess, if it's not going to be your profession and you're not really going to ever do this again. But boy, I've seen it done, and it's not pretty, and it's not necessary, and a reputation for, well, let's just call it a negative reputation in one area will indeed follow you to other areas, because we all have long memories. And if we saw something borderline dishonest, kind of disreputable, somebody didn't keep their word, not exactly legally dishonest as in go to jail, but a lack of moral fiber, shall we call it? Yeah? People remember that long after they've forgotten the actual details of the incident. So reputation sticks in people's prior memory. It'll stick in yours too, let's face it. You have opinions about people who you have dealt with in the past and probably will deal with in the future. But you have a prior memory of them that's either negative or positive based upon your interaction and based upon their their actions and their words. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's reputation. And you have one in their memory too. So you want it to be a positive one, a good one, that says, you know, this person was good to deal with because they did what they said, right? They held their word. They didn't argue about it in some way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Corey and others are saying that reputation is currency in negotiation. Currency. It is, kind of. It's also how you get asked back. in all truth and honesty, right? Yeah, it's how you get the reputation to be the go-to person, to be the person that is asked back to do the workshop, the seminar, the negotiation. Yes, reputation is currency in negotiation. It's currency in the sense of value when you walk in the room, but not something to be traded, of course, right? Yeah. It's something that you hang on to because it's so important and you don't breach it. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting point that Hashida and others are making. Sometimes you don't have a reputation because you haven't done it enough. You're too inexperienced. And you need... Reputation comes from being experienced in the field and having people have an opinion about you. But I know that a lot of you are not so terribly experienced, especially in the negotiation field. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're getting a lot of questions about that. Hashid and others are saying that if you don't have a reputation, what should you do? Well, first of all, not having a bad reputation has already put you sky high. But the answer is, on a very practical level, I think you're going to ask someone with a good reputation to vouch for you. Yeah. Give a reference, really. I vouch for people all the time. But now, I do it with a great deal of thought because it has to do with my reputation. And sometimes people ask me to vouch for them who I really don't know very well. They are not exactly not friends, but they're more like acquaintances. And I have never dealt with them on a business level. I might think they're okay to have a snack with or something, but I don't know much about how they deal with business, right? Yeah. And I will not endorse those types of people. I say to them, find somebody who is really closer to you and has really seen you in action. Yeah. Your mother. But you need somebody to vouch for you and put their reputation up saying you're good. Mm-hmm. Honest. Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily, it would be nice if it was somebody in your profession, right? Which would give it extra gravitas. But it really doesn't have to be, especially if you're fairly young, right? Yeah. And also you might want to ask permission and keep the contact information of the people who you have dealt with negotiation-wise. Yes. And in case you need to ask them to give an opinion about your abilities, right? Yeah. Yes. People asking on how to accrue that information. One of the ways to gain experience and to gain your own prior memory, pardon me, my voice seems to be going today, and to gain credibility in the community is to do some volunteer work. Right? Yeah. First of all, it's good for the community. It's good for getting out and getting to know people. It's pleasurable, usually. Yeah. And do some volunteer. Help with some negotiations. Yeah. It'll give you experience. It'll give you exposure. Right? And it'll already give you a reputation for efficiency, if nothing else, and for reasonableness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reputation is extremely important. People are talking about the fact, as Justine says, that a good reputation is hard to acquire and easy to destroy. Hard to acquire and easy to destroy. Mm-hmm. Yes, Paul and others are also talking about never breach a confidence or violate your word. Very important. sometimes I've seen this a few times, and it's always, I don't know why I'm always shocked. I mean, really, I'm a business person. I really shouldn't be. But reputation is so important. I have seen several times, and this is not very many really, because I've been in business a really long time, where people have a very good reputation, and they are now kind of trading on it, and they've gone less than reputable. But everybody still has prior memory that they have a good reputation. I saw this just the other day. The name shall remain anonymous because it's going to go to litigation. But there is actually an art dealer in my area, which is a big cosmopolitan area, who had a very, very good reputation for valuable artwork. Mm-hmm. Got it appraised properly with all the bells and whistles and the taking of paint chips and things. You know what I mean. And really had Provence and was really reputable. And she traded on that reputation, and I might say ruined it, destroyed it. But she obviously didn't care because she did it deliberately. She wanted the money. She traded on that reputation for some time and sold fakes, actual fakes, the kind made by starving artists in their basement that copies some sort of a work of art that would be worth a lot of money. Yeah. And actually, and I don't know the actual full story because I don't represent her. I represent somebody who was fooled. And I didn't, and she had, you know how sometimes people are idiots, right? And they get greedy and they go and buy something and it's not exactly what was reported to be, but they didn't really look into it too well. My client has purchased a very expensive piece of artwork purported to be from a famous artist and from a private collection, and they took the gallery owner's word for the value, the provenance, the authenticity. She guaranteed it. There was lots of papers saying what it was and that it had been appraised. They were all lies. She was trading on her reputation. And it wouldn't necessarily have even come out if she hadn't gotten really greedy and done it a lot of times and somebody went to sell one of the paintings and get it reappraised. Yeah. And found out that the paint was brand new. Mm-hmm. So, reputation, it's easy to destroy. And also now we've all got the memory of her that she was once reputable but absolutely positively is a crook now. That memory's not going to be erased and none of us will deal with her again. Yeah. So it is true that for some years, I guess, she made quite a big profit. And she traded on the reputation of really a family business that she had taken over. Yeah. Goody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Never breach your confidence or violate your word. Uh-huh. This is an interesting thought, too. People are talking about kind of collective memory where not the individuals have the reputation, really, but it's the group that has the reputation. And that there's an expectation from the people who are, for example, the board of directors of a group, of an organization. And there is collective, hopefully positive, unfortunate if it's negative, memory about how they will respond in the future and whether or not they can be depended upon by what they did in the past. And we remember, right? Yeah. That collective memory also goes to the participants who are, for lack of a better word, representatives of the group, but they're not really representatives of the group in that sense. because they're not, they come from the group, they may not be actually authorized, but they represent what the group will do within our group, within our participation, because they have a certain mindset, because they also have come from a collective memory, from the organization, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So collective positive or negative memory, it has to do with your reputation profoundly, right? Yes. And one always has to be careful. It is known, and I am very, very proud and careful about this, that if I say I will do something, which is why I don't say I'll do everything, if I say I will do something, I will do it to the best of my abilities and not shirk it, not just blow it off, right? Even if it turns out that whatever I've said I'll do is not to my advantage. Even if, right? Yeah, because I want good reputation. I want people to know that my word is my bond, and it is. I have actually done really substantial deals, millions of dollars, on a handshake. And then we write it down, of course, but on a handshake to get started, where we all have a good reputation and we can, and it's a go, right? My handshake means that I will do it. Absolutely, positively, and without question, even if it no longer benefits me, because my reputation's important. Yeah. People actually, not the other day, but a while back, we were doing a real estate deal, when we had a handshake, and the person I shook the hand of said, "That's okay, we don't have to write it down, I trust you." And I went, "Fabulous, I trust you too, let's write it down anyhow, just in case, because you never know, life happens, right?" But, yeah, and I trusted the other person too. We changed position because there was something that needed to be done right away. We both substantially changed position on a handshake because we knew it would be fine. There was no question about it, that it would be an okay thing to do, that we would not be sorry. Mm-hmm. We actually changed position. Mm-hmm. So what's our next? Oops, we're going to run out of time. What's our next topic? We're going to do interpretation and perception for positive memory. Combine those two because they're kind of both sides of the same coin. You know, Suki and others are saying never act until you have all the facts for interpretation and perception. I think that that is a good motto because it makes you look for the facts. It makes you look for the 5W questions. But as Nick and others are saying, the facts sometimes change. And I might add, since we're doing interpretation and perception, sometimes how we look at the facts changes. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sometimes the facts remain. There really are facts. They're not an opinion. But how we look at them, how we interpret and perceive them, changes. Pardon me. And that does have to do with memory and what it is that we have done in the past and other people's opinions sway us for perception and interpretation. Mm-hmm. Yes, quite a few people and others are talking about those studies that assess witness interpretation and perception. Yeah. And they do kind of scientific studies on a regular basis, I think, where they show people a video or they act out something. They act out a scene, like a fight or something like that. And then they ask people, they separate people out and they ask them as witnesses to it. They ask them some factual questions. And you'd be surprised the answers are all over the place, right? And then people remember it differently depending on their perception of it, especially regarding degree, right? Very angry, kind of miffed, that kind of stuff, right? And there's, I just saw this done at one of those speaker forums. And somebody came with the video where, that you've probably seen this, where there's kind of a basketball game and a fight and like that, and there's lots of movement and action, and it's very short, and you're asked to watch it and then describe what happened. And during the video, during the fight, the argument, yeah, a lot of you have seen it. It's the monkey one, exactly. There's a person in a gorilla suit that walks through the scene and waves at the camera. And a lot of people, because they are intent on the action, they miss the monkey. They miss the guy in the gorilla suit, and he's not like in the distance or something. He walks right behind the people who are in play and waves. He goes by slowly, and he stands there and he waves and then leaves. Now, once you know the trick, once you've seen that video, you see the monkey because you're waiting for him. You're watching for it. But the first time, a tremendous percentage of people don't see the monkey because they are intent on the argument. They're intent on the scene. They're intent. They've been told that they're going to witness it, for one thing. So they are watching very carefully so that they can report back. Now, if people are not told that they're going to be asked questions about it as witnesses, they do slightly better with the monkey. Because what they're doing is they're looking at the whole picture and wondering why they're watching it. Right? And so they see the whole thing and they see the monkey walk through. But if you've been told that you're going to be asked questions about it and you're going to be a witness, then you focus on the main event and you don't see the monkey. It's the weirdest thing. And also, no matter what, they record these things. They record each response, pardon me, and the participants, the witnesses, they all report different things. It's the darndest thing. Even the facts, what color were the shirts on the people who are arguing? People don't, they state a color. They don't say, I don't know, but it's not at all the same color half the time, right? Yeah, it's very interesting to see one of those studies because whatever it is that you've said, whatever it is that you've thought that you witnessed, whatever facts you have gleaned, even if they're wrong, but that's what you think, that is perception and interpretation, and it will solidify into prior memory. You'll be absolutely positive that that's what you saw, that that's what happened, right? Yeah. I've had people, I swear to you, I've seen people who have solidified prior memory, and I don't think it happened at all. Or somebody told them about it, and they have internalized it as something that they know. Because sometimes it's really like, really? I don't think so. And they go, yeah, I remember it distinctly, right? Especially if it's been a little while, right? Or it was exciting in some way. Yeah, exciting because the participant was perhaps young. It impacted them directly. That kind of stuff, exciting. Yes. And whatever that really kind of faulty memory is, it has solidified into prior memory and is pulled up as fact. Yeah, that's what happened. That's who was there. That's even better. Who was there? Yeah. Didn't see the monkey. Yeah. Let's get on to our next one because we are about to run out of time. I don't know if we're going to get to the recipes or not, and if not, I apologize. Yes, I will try to get to at least one of them. Oop, we've got 19 minutes. Okay, let's get to hindsight. Yeah, Siham and others are saying that analysis of the past to improve the future is what hindsight is. Hindsight is analysis of the past to improve the future. We've just discussed that past memory might be influenced by lots of things. However, an analysis of it will influence the future, hopefully for the better. Because sometimes people solidify into, I don't know, militantism, which is, yeah, that's interesting. Yes, we've been having some incidents of that in the United States, haven't we? Yes, and in other places in the world too. And that's kind of group collective memory is what that really is. And then someone takes it, they find a vulnerable person, kind of a person who is capable of being influenced, the leaders, and they do, they influence them. They militarize them, yes? And it's really, really an interesting phenomenon, yeah. We'll talk about group memory in 1 second. Let's do hindsight. Of course, as a lot of you were saying, Linda and others, hindsight is 20/20, right? It means that hindsight's perfect because you look back at what happened and you go, well, I should have done something different. Well, yeah, but the moment's past. It's to learn from, not to agonize over, right? Yeah. Yes, Alex and others are saying you create your future positive memory of how you learned from your mistakes using hindsight. Mm-hmm. And remember, it's analysis, not recrimination. Yeah, it's to look at it and go, you know, I won't do that again. In hindsight, which is 2020, it wasn't a good idea. Especially when you're starting out, you get a lot of hindsight. I've got to tell you, I've got a lot of hindsight, especially when dealing with people who ask for a favor or something like that, right? Yeah. Let's get on to group memory, which is kind of our last section, and then I am going to try to get to one of the recipes. We'll see if we make it. When somebody is acting in a way that is not from personal experience. Zoe says when they're told what to think and act upon, that is from group memory. Now, the individual may have a memory of teachings from the group, from maybe possibly a leader, in fact, usually a leader. But they're not their memories, really. They're memories of being taught, of being told something as fact, which you're now acting upon, but was not your fact, was the group memory, the group bias, really. You see that with people who indeed do extremely self-injurious, they blow themselves up. I mean, you can't get more group memory than that. And people say, well, that's brainwashing. Like hypnotism. I don't know. They get pretty far away from the source. They have lots of opportunity to turn back, right? Thank you for all of your participation. Quite a few people, Seema and others, are talking about hypnosis and having a group memory kind of infused as in a reaction. I'm going to stay away from that discussion. I don't know. And that's really the truth. You know how I've always got an opinion on everything? I don't think I've ever dealt with anybody under the influence of hypnosis. If I have, then I just didn't know the difference. because I've seen some stubborn people, but they have indeed been brought around so that we can have a successful outcome. And I don't think that would have occurred if they were under some sort of outside influence like that. Right? Yeah. And I don't know if hypnosis would infuse a group memory. People are saying it will, and that the individual would act upon it without any conscious thought in a negotiation, not just on a single act like pull the ripcord. I don't know. I'm going to pass on that. We've got quite a few people talking about it. That'll take some research. People are saying, can you do a show on it? We can do a show on suggestion, if you'd like. It's being suggested, yes. I don't like to... That's a real item of expertise. You should actually, if you're interested in it, you should actually find an expert to actually have an opinion about whether that can be done, how it would be done. And I guess my question would be, how long would the effect last? Yeah. To me, hypnosis is something that you see on stage. And I think it's a carny trick. It's a parlor trick. Now, anything deeper than that, a lot of you have done hypnosis for various things. I can see that quitting smoking is a biggie. And it lasts. Well, yes, I'm sure that it was very effective. I'm not arguing about that. And prior memory and back to our topic, which is prior memory, of course. But the fact that you're not smoking years later, I think it's because maybe the hypnosis broke the cycle of smoking and you didn't need to go back. I don't know. I'm going to pass on that. I would have to call in an expert, and so will you. You'll have to, if you really want to know if that can be done and you think what you're looking at might be that, yes, you need to call in an expert. I'm going to pass on that entire topic. I simply don't know enough about it. I don't think I've ever seen it done. And if I have, then it's very subtle. And it can be overcome. The power suggestion that's implied can be overcome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Kumia says that group memory is not personal experience, but it is ingrained as an underlying truth and unquestioned. Yes. Ever know anybody who says everybody knows all the time? Yeah. Sometimes there is a group memory that has been ingrained as an underlying truth and unquestioned, as Kumia says. And that's when we break out the 5W questions. We want to know what we're dealing with here, especially if you can see that it is not personal to the individual that you're talking to. It's not their personal experience. They are reacting in a way that is group promoted, that is kind of a response, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, the people asking what to do, how do you get people to not do that anymore? Well, first of all, you need to help them understand that for this specific issue, at this specific time, at this specific moment, we're going to lay that aside because we need to get this done. We need to get to a successful outcome. Usually, the problem is not the fact that they don't want the successful outcome, because that's an entire different issue, and it's called bad faith, right? Mm-hmm. Usually, they want the specific outcome. They are in agreement with that. They just don't like the other people, or they don't like the way it's being done. And one of the things that you can explain, which seems to always be a surprise, is that the faster we get this done, the faster we get rid of each other, right? Yeah. This always seems to be a surprise statement to people. I don't know why, but it does. So what we're going to do is we're going to get to know each other. We're going to get to be able to deal with each other. And we're going to get this over with so that we can reach our successful outcome. And the next time we have the same type of issue, we'll know who to deal with because we've already done it. We'll have a positive memory. Yeah. Hmm? And one of the ways we're going to do this is that we're going to have some food in the room so that when we, well, things turn a little potentially uncivil or we need a break, we can stay in the room, talk to each other as people, and have something pleasant to do and discuss that has nothing to do with the issues and doesn't piss us off. Food, right? Yeah. Now, if you're going to have food, and you are, and it depends, of course, on your facilities and whether you can reheat things and stuff, what you bring. If you're going to have food, you need to take a survey amongst your participants concerning allergies, food restrictions, religious prohibitions to types of food. We want everybody to have a good time, right? Right. We disseminate the information so that everybody knows. Also, you want to have people come with a list of what is in the food, not what it's called, meatloaf, but what is in it, so that I can run my eye down the list and see if I can eat it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, don't want anybody not to have a convivial good time. I also think that, first of all, I hate to run out of food because that's a bad party, right? Right. And we're making a convivial atmosphere. I think there should be at least one safe dish. What's a safe dish? We've taken our survey. Everybody can eat it, as far as we know. It is full of ingredients that my people would be familiar with, and they would have eaten them before. There's not too many ingredients on the list. And delicious goes with it too, yes. Mm-hmm. But this is a safe dish, and it would be familiar to my participants, all the ingredients. But wherever you are, and this is an international show, you think about what your people had eaten in the past, right? What would be common? You see, where I am, a curry, for example, would be extremely uncommon. That would be my adventure recipe. But not maybe where you are. That might be just comfort food. It might be something everybody eats. So let's do the garlic chicken. I've left about 6 minutes. Let's see if we can do it. Yes, because otherwise we're just going to keep pushing the recipes off. It's my safe recipe. I cook with a lot of garlic. I admit this. If you think this is too much garlic, just cut back on the garlic. Right? Right. Now let's have, about 8 pounds. Depends how many people you've got, right? You make it a little bigger, a little smaller. But leftovers are good just for one day anyway. Of boneless, skinless chicken breasts, I can buy them like that. It's a big convenience. If you can't and you can only get a whole chicken or something, just cut it up and make boneless, skinless pieces, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Let's have a nice lemon. You know to zap it in the microwave for 10 seconds if it's not very juicy. Roll it around. Let's have... I'm going to use a lot of garlic. I am. I'm going to, use a dozen garlic cloves, maybe more. I love garlic, and it's called garlic chicken, right? Yes. So I'm going to use 20 garlic cloves that I'm going to peel and like that. Let's have a couple tablespoons of olive oil. It does make this very garlicky, though, so you can cut back if you think. Let's have some thyme sprigs. Remember to pull them out, please. I don't know why I always forget to pull them out. People, oh, look. Let's have a nice big couple of big carrots that we're going to chop up just kind of coarsely. Let's have 3 carrot sticks and 6 celery sticks, also coarsely chopped. A nice big sweet onion. I do like the sweet ones and not the bitter ones that we're going to coarsely chop. Let's have a couple cups of chicken stock. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Maybe a little salt and pepper at the end, you'll see. Let's preheat our oven, 400. Now, you know we've got all those chicken breasts right? We're going to rub them with some oil and the lemon and the garlic cloves and like that. I'm actually going to put this all in a plastic bag and kind of marinate them so that it's all delicious, right? Yeah. And then we're not going to waste any of it. We're going to put it all in our Dutch oven. How long? I put it in a plastic bag with the oil and the garlic cloves and the lemon juice, right? And I stick it in the refrigerator. I do it in the morning, and then in the afternoon I come back and use the whole thing, right? You can do it overnight. I'm suspicious of keeping things too long, even in the fridge, because chicken's perishable. But you could, it's a marinade. You can marinate it overnight. It makes everything very garlic-infused and lemon-infused and yummy. Yeah, So we've got the chicken chunks, essentially speaking. We're going to make it into chunks. About, I really like to maximize. I'm going to, it depends how big they are. People are asking how much chicken. I would get about a dozen boneless, skinless chicken breasts and cut them into kind of big chunks and then marinate them like that. There'll be enough liquid, and if not, put a little more lemon juice in there. Okay, we've got our Dutch oven or our casserole dish or whatever we're doing. We're going to take the bag, we're going to dump it in, and spread it out kind of evenly, right? And we're going to add the chicken stock, and we're going to add the onion and the carrot and the celery and like that, all the stuff, right, and the rosemary. What would we use, thyme? I use one or the other. Yeah, and the sprig. The sprig of herb. We're going to put it in the oven for a couple of hours, right? Before we think it's done, we're going to make sure the chicken is cooked. But we've made it into pieces, so it probably is. But we're going to take and we're going to insert a toothpick to make sure that it looks nice and clear, right? Mm-hmm. And if we'd like, we can put a little bit of flour to make a little bit thicker gravy and simmer it on the stove. Mm-hmm. Delicious, easy. Mm-hmm. Served it over rice. Serve it over pasta. Serve it over something that's separate on the counter that people can take their own, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, it is very garlic lemony. And I'm in favor. I just like garlic, and I think that it makes the room smell delicious if you can warm it in the room, if you've got an oven. Or even if you've got a stove, if it's fully cooked, you can kind of reheat it to hot on the stove, and it'll smell delicious. Yeah, put on a cover and kind of simmer it. Make sure that you haven't out-simmered your juice, though. Bring along some stock. Could you add water? Well, yeah, I suppose you could. I favor stock because it has flavor in and of itself, right? It's got a little bit of salt and some other yummy things in there, the chicken stock. It makes it nice and robust. I favor to use stock. If you're stuck and you've run out of liquid, yeah, you could use water. There's plenty of taste in here. So that is our garlic chicken. Yummy. Yes. And it is served with some sort of a starch in a separate pot that you've made in a separate pot so that people can just take what they like. Yes, people are voting for couscous. Some of you always vote for mashed potatoes. I actually think that's a good idea. It's just that in my experience, a thing like rice or couscous or something like that can be kept warm more easily than a mashed potato item. And that's just me. Maybe it's just, you know, my facilities. But generally speaking, I think that things like mashed potatoes get cold real fast and they're hard to keep warm. Depends on your facilities, yeah. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.